comes to the Fitzgeralds again on his way to Saigon. And again, he's a member of the family. He's like a big brother. I'm in college now. I think I'm young, maybe freshman in college. So the Bronx is very close to Manhattan. It's just a train ride in. And so there was this little family outing to go see a movie in Manhattan that night. Now, I had no idea of this, but maybe my mother was behind the fact that everyone else sort of dropped out of the plan except Dennis and I. And so the two of us went down to the movie by ourselves. We come back to the house, everyone's asleep, and we sit on the couch, and somehow feelings for each other were presented. So I don't know who started it, but we found out that we were really caring about each other, and from far away, because no word had been passed between us except my little artful flirtations, and I think he flirted back. Because he would tell me about the dates he had in Grand Rapids and all of that stuff. So our little flirtation. Okay. We have one kiss. He goes off to Vietnam. And so I'm in college, and our relationship developed by letter. And it would be more common if two people were building a relationship. They'd have a date, and you can imagine they get more and more. They get closer, and they know more about each other, and their relationship deepens, and face-to-face. But by some strange chance, I have all those letters. Knowing me, if you knew me, it wouldn't surprise you that I kept all his letters. But what's really surprising is that he kept, because he was not nostalgic like I was, but after he died, I started to put them together, and it was just too much. I couldn't do it. But subsequently, I did. I sort of found the dates, and I put them in, September 10th, and then one came back September 17th, and then I sent one on September. And it's probably boring to anybody else, but it's interesting to see how flirtations got more and more intimate. And of course, all of the my nursing students in the dormitory knew about this, and they knew when the letters came from Vietnam, because they could see, our mailboxes were little pigeonholes, and you could sort of see through the glass on the outside that it came from, there was this strange return address for the army folks. And so when we weren't in clinical instruction, we were taking ordinary literature and history and stuff up at the college, which was on 68th Street, and we were living at 26th. So if I'd be up there for classes, I'd say to somebody, bring me, if my mail comes in and you see something from Dennis. So they all knew about it, and I'd go down and read these letters to them or parts of them. So he does a year in Saigon and comes home, thank God. He wasn't out fighting a whole lot, but he was writing newsletters and writing propaganda, actually. And so he comes home in October. And in January, we're engaged. So that long story to say how I got out of college as a married woman, because we got married after my junior year. He was older than I. And there was no reason to wait, and I actually got the best grades as a married woman because there were no shenanigans, no all-nighters in the dormitory. I was a married woman, and so I came home. We lived in Rockland County, which is north of the city, so I had a fairly long commute. I couldn't do the homework on the bus. So we had our dinner, and then I went to my desk, and he went to his reading, and I was a pretty good student. So I should have gotten married when I was in high school, because then I'd be Phi Beta Kappa or something, Anyway, so he's a wonderful, wonderful man. There was none better. Just a fine, fine person. And we had a great life, three wonderful children. Jim, our oldest, was born in 1973, so it occurs to me he was just 48. So I have old children. My children are 5 and 6 years apart, which for some, that's a big interval. And we had no game plan. You know, like some families will plan, which is fine for them, and maybe we could have, but we didn't. We just let it unfold. And so 5 or 6 years later, Patrick was born, and he's in Michigan, and my youngest is right here in. He actually lives in Milford, but he works at Mel's in Cooperstown. Do you go to Mel's at all? Okay, so he's bartender manager. He's dark beard, and you might know him. You can say that you met me. okay, so you asked me about college. I did go quickly through college because I dropped into the getting married thing. I entered college with some honors thing. So they put me into some honors slots for the academic things, not nursing, but the nursing regimen, the curriculum is very tightly organized because you spend full mornings or full afternoons on the clinical ward, and so that robs a lot of opportunities for taking classes. And so I thought Hunter was the best. I'd loved living in the city. I had a phrase that said, don't let your classes interfere with your education. And so I'm a curious chick, and I got some kind of a newsletter that told me of all of the things that were happening in Manhattan. And I knew I would not be in Manhattan forever, so I'd look at it, and I would just go to these strange events by myself, just because I thought that they were interesting or I was curious about it. So I think I did live the fact that, I mean, I did okay in college. Especially in my senior year when I was a more serious student. But college was great. I loved living in the dormitory. We were assigned by our last name. So some of my best friends are F's and G's and E's because we were all together, except one of my best friends from college is a W. But, and she was assigned to the 10th floor because of how the alphabet went. But she was a good friend with G. They went to school together. So W and G... we're often together, and so she's been my bud and was a bridesmaid at my wedding, and I stay in touch with her. So it was good. I loved being there. It was hard work, scrambled. So that's school.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about your master's thesis?
Oh, yes. This is a good story. So I'm not even in graduate school. As I said, I had a bachelor's degree, and that was a little remarkable in the early years. And so I graduated from college in 71 and then did several kinds of nursing at the hospital. And at one point thought I really wanted to get a master's. I wanted to be not normal. I wanted to be a little bit different, have a little edge. But even before I had any idea to go to graduate school, the community struggled a little bit to put things on at the end of the summer season. And the Fenimore House, it was called the Fenimore House, not museum, the room that's called the ballroom, which is the big one just to the right, was not an exhibit space. It was an auditorium. And so there was this lecture series on a variety of topics, Sunday afternoons maybe, and one was on the history of Bassett Hospital. And I thought the hospital was very interesting. I might have mentioned to you that when I talked to you the other day that we selected Bassett because it was a teaching hospital. Okay, so I knew very little other than it was a teaching hospital, but there's more of it unfolded for me as I began to practice. It had unusual things like 24-hour time, so it was 1400 instead of 2 p.m., and then there were other elements that made it stand apart. So it was very, very unusual, and I thought, boy, how did this happen? I would occasionally go to nursing meetings or meetings, and mostly physicians, because I don't think that nurses recognized, you know, nurses other than Cooperstown nurses recognized that Bassett was special. But I might be in a group with physicians, and I might say that I was from Bassett Hospital. Bassett Hospital in Cooperstown? You're from there? So I'm thinking, what's up with that? anyway, these things just stayed in my head. I don't know when I learned that the very first bone marrow transplant in the world was done in Cooperstown. And the physician who did it won the Nobel Prize for medicine. Now, not while he was at Basset. Dr. E. Donnell Thomas moved to Seattle, where a big bone marrow center was and still is, and he continued the work that he started in Cooperstown. So he won the prize while he was in Seattle. But I had the chance to meet him, and I interviewed him even. But, so all of these things were in my head about, you know, why is this the way it is? So there's a lecture from Dr. Charles Allen Ashley, who was then, whatever they called him then, president or executive or chief of the hospital. And so I'm in the audience, and he gives what I thought was an interesting history, but it occurs to me there was not word one about nursing. And after their lecture, there was this little reception. We're standing around having punch or something. And my boss, who had just retired, she was the director of nursing, and she hired me, and we're having sipping tea. And I said to Alberta, was her name, Alberta, why don't, now that you're retired, why don't you write the history of nursing? Because there wasn't anything about nurses. And, you know, we laughed. Okay. I guess I never forgot it. She didn't do it. And so at some considerable years later, I decided that I was going to embark. Now, I had three kids still at home. One was applying for college at some point, and I remember being more worried about his deadlines, his application deadlines, than mine. My husband was a full-time worker, and he owned his own business, so the evenings were spent in his office where he did some of the paperwork. So it was a busy household, but I went part-time, and the hospital had a tuition reimbursement program, and what a value that was. It was really a promissory note, so you signed somewhere that you would stay at Basset, and I wasn't going anywhere, so it was no big deal. And at that time, there were really only three opportunities to get a master's in nursing: Syracuse University, which was 2 hours west, Binghamton, which is 2 hours south, and Russell Sage, 2 hours east. And Russell Sage did not require GREs. And I heard something about, they're not predictable. They don't predict a student's ability at the master's level. So I was happy about that. And then I'm thinking, 2 hours, that's lost time. And my time is precious, right? Russell Sage was the only one who had these courses that were given as what they called institutes. So you could take a 3-credit course. It only required, 4 trips for the whole semester. But you went Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Something like that. And that appealed to me because I saw this 2 hours back and forth as just dead time. So that's why I chose Russell Sage. And at that time, the hospital paid the entire tuition and books. So the library was wonderful, the medical library at the hospital. I counted on it helping me, and it could get me journals. At that time, I don't know where they got it, but they were hard copy journals. Again, this was a long, long time ago. So I went part-time, so it took me 4 years. And, little by little, I had this visual of a balance and all the credits that I still needed to take for here. And then, over the 4 years, it went like this. And my husband was very supportive. And he was a good guy, so he had never had any issue doing dishes, making a meal. Although for a liberated couple, we had a pretty gender-specific assignment of chores. I mean, he was a professional contractor, so I didn't have to change a light bulb or fix the toilet. Why would I? Because he knows how to do it. Now I have to, and I have to struggle with what to do with the tool or what tool even to use. So he's very supportive, and as I mentioned, I was desperate about, I thought I would not make it with this thesis. And so that's, I think, how I got onto the topic. And a problem was that my research professor was a quant jock, So she was a quantitative. Her work was all quantitative, and this is qualitative. I felt a buzz. Is that here? Oh, maybe your phone buzzed.
Maybe.
Okay. We still have tape. I think over 2 years, over 2 years for me anyway, at my pace of taking courses, you have this advancing classes where you can do some of the work and get it graded and then begin to build on it. But my professor, a nurse scientist, nurse doctorate, just we were not on the same page. And so it gave me some vexed time when I wasn't even clear. I finally found an advisor who had done a qualitative work, and so she was my mentor. And I was so into the regalia at graduation because I love ritual. I love it. I think it's so great for the human soul. And I don't know, 6 months in advance, you order the regalia and pay for it. And here I wasn't going to make it because I wouldn't have the work done. And I remember going to some kind of an event close to the deadline, and I saw my advisor. I said, I'm not going to do it. I can't make it. She said, you're so close. This work has transformed you. I'm sure she uses it a whole bunch of times to make you feel okay, you know. Well, as I mentioned to you the other night, we were down to the wire, and I told you about the Macintosh printer not doing a very good job, so... should I repeat it for the tape? The printer was ancient and it would only print 10 pages at a time and it would take an hour. And so I slept on the couch and woke up every hour and queued the printer to do 10 more pages so that in the morning I went off to work and my husband, God love him, drove it to Russell Sage so that it got in under the wire. And that night... it happened that my son had some, he went to Cornell, and maybe the school was close to being done, but he came with a whole bunch of fraternity buddies for dinner. And I just remember that it was the first glass of wine I had had in, you know, a really long time while I struggled with this. I'm so glad to have done it. I loved it. And the best luck you can have is to love your thesis. And I never didn't love it. So when I figured out the methodology, the hospital actually started in 1922, but then it stopped. So it started again in 1927. And so I found two nurses from each of those decades. So I had 14 narrators. And in addition to that, I read every single annual report from 1927 to 1991, when I finished this. And so that gave background. And so I had a guided interview that I used on all of them. And like you, it was a gentle guide. Nurses would talk about other things, which was fine. But then, of course, I had to analyze, had to transcribe it. I had someone somehow the hospital found someone who would do this for me, thank God. So then analyzing all that data and putting the answers together over the time. So I loved it, and no one else had written it. In fact, no one knew, to my knowledge, it wasn't known that the Bassett Hospital had a training school for nurses. If you'd asked anybody, they wouldn't have known it. But as I mentioned, in the early 20th century, it was standard. So the Thanksgiving Hospital, which is now the Thanksgiving Home, had a nurses training school. It happened that one of my narrators went to the Thanksgiving Hospital Training School for Nurses. Okay, when Bassett opened up the first time, the Thanksgiving Hospital closed, and so these student nurses were sort of stuck. And so, I don't know the details, but I imagine that the Bassett Hospital said, okay, well, we'll absorb these students and we'll get them graduated. So this woman that I interviewed, she had a certificate and she showed it to me. Her her graduation certificate that says the Bassett Hospital Training School for Nurses. So nobody knew that there was a moment in time, a couple of years, maybe a year and a half, when these student nurses were sort of adopted by Bassett Hospital because there was no more Thanksgiving Hospital. And so we graduated them, and then that was done. The school never existed again, because by that time, they were thinking that university-based nurses were better for the hospital. And so they were early adopters of that. Because I'm telling you that when I was entering practice in 1970, a nurse with a college degree was still pretty unusual. And we're talking about the 1920s. So that took a long time to really get enculturated. Where was I that I was getting into that? Do you remember where I went off on that? The fact that in the narrators, that's one of the things I learned. And so she gave me that certificate. She was old and didn't care about it. And to me, it was a treasure. And there's a museum term called found in collection. You're familiar with it. So I had it framed. Ellen Tillipaw is a friend of mine. She's the mayor of Cooperstown, but she's also a graduate of the CGP. She's a paper conservator now. So she matted and framed it, and I gave it to the hospital because that was a piece of history that was not known. So that's a small little bit that was not known, but the whole nursing story, nobody talked about it. And I told you about the bone marrow, the doctor who, and there was also, that happened in the 50s. And also, to do that bone marrow work required something called whole body radiation, which was not known. So briefly, the experiment was two twins. One had leukemia. So they took bone marrow from the healthy twin and then radiated the leukemic twin, the whole body, and then gave the leukemic twin the healthier bone marrow. Some of those twins died, some made it, and so, of course, they built on that now. And interestingly, my husband died from lymphoma, and he had a bone marrow transplant. It was his own bone marrow that got washed. But it's just interesting. The fact that the hospital knew a lot about whole body radiation in the 50s, when what was called the Red Scare, Russia was going to take us over and torture us and drop the atomic bomb so we'd all die, the fact that Bassett and Cooperstown knew something about whole body radiation and its effects was very appealing, attractive to the U.S. government. And so the hospital got a chunk of federal dollars because of what they knew. So that and the bone marrow, all the doctors published. Lots and lots and lots of scientific papers were published based on this. None of the nurses published. And so why? And you'll hear me discuss it. The American Journal of Nursing began publishing in 1900. And this is 50 years later. Why didn't the nurses submit these articles? Well, I don't know the answer for sure, but nurses were women, largely, and no mentor at the hospital with a wide view could have said to nurse Joe Blow or Josephine Blow, you know, what you're learning about these patients, nobody knows, so you should write it up. Because in fact, nobody knew how to take care of these patients. They went by the seat of their pants. They used their logic and their intelligence and their knowledge of nursing and science and worked closely with the doctors. You'll see me talk about it. And so I was able to at least lift up some of those stories from those nurses who had taken care of those patients. So that was thrilling. When I finished, maybe I had a better cover, but I wrapped it in big fat red ribbon, big bow, and put it on the desk of my boss, who was the vice president for nursing, as a thank you. I mean, the hospital paid for my entire master's degree, and this was a gift to them to have the nursing story. So John Davis, you may know of him, Dr. John Davis wrote The History of Bassett. And he's well known as the Bassett historian. He actually, with my permission, used stuff out of my book, out of my thesis, and giving me credit. So when I knew that he was going to do this work, I said, John, make sure you tell the nursing story, because it is a physician-centric organization. Many hospitals are, I'm not saying that nurses played as important a role as physicians, but we certainly can be partners. And so I'm not disappointed with how he wrote the book. Yeah. So that's my master's story.
Okay, we sort of got into it, but can you talk a little bit more about your experience as a nurse?
Sure. I worked while I was still in college. There was some kind of thing with the state education department that if you had some kind of credits, some level of credits, you could become licensed as a practical nurse. And so I worked while we were married, before we had children, before I got out of college for a year. So we lived in Rockland County, as I said, a northern suburb, and it was a commute. And so I worked at Nyack Hospital, which is very near where we lived, as a practical nurse here and there. I don't have a distinct memory of it, but after graduation, then I'm a registered nurse. You have to take licensing examination from the New York State Education Department, and I passed. And so I practiced then as a registered nurse at Nyack Hospital. And it didn't take long. Again, the nurse with a bachelor's degree, people took notice, nurses in organizations took notice. And so very young and probably not skilled enough, I was promoted to be a nurse. They called them head nurses. And I ran a floor that was like two-thirds this unit and one-third that unit. And so I learned a lot about leadership and a lot of my values. And I guess because my parents were leaders, as I mentioned, I had some leadership skills. But I surely didn't have a lot of knowledge, nursing knowledge. And lucky for me, the Rockland County Community College was up and running, and adult women, largely, whose kids were maybe in high school by that time, they went off, and in four semesters, they were registered nurses. So I mentioned earlier the two pathways when I was in high school, and by this time there was a third pathway, that is an associate degree, only 2 years. But these women were so smart because they had managed families, they had managed contractors, and they were so mature. And I just recall going down the hall when I had a question or an issue, and I wanted what I called a nursing consultation. When I left there, they gave me a charm, and it said, it has the word nursing consultation on it, because that was my phrase. And maybe that was unusual, but I was not skilled enough. I did have leadership abilities, and I did have the bachelor's degree, so that artificially lifted me up. Okay, so I get out of college in 71. By 73, then we're renting an apartment in a junkyard. It was a sweet little apartment. I have very warm memories because we were married, just married there. We had no money. I remember before we were married, Dennis was living there because he got this job with the daily newspaper. He didn't have any money. He borrowed from me. I forced him to borrow from me. I may have had $200 in the bank. He borrowed it. And so we spent a Saturday together getting his apartment ready. And I'm frankly a little, in my heart of hearts, I'm a little disappointed because he's ready to buy stuff from a job.